Welcome to the Back in Time podcast. I am your host, Kyle Autry, joined as always by my co-host, JD. JD, how are you tonight?
Rocking and rolling and ready to rock and roll and rock and roll. I think I'm ready to rock and roll.
Kyle,
It's the Rock and Roll Express. Can we do this?
For those about to rock, we salute you. Okay, man. Well, yeah, looking forward to diving into this review. And this is a special episode. Yesterday, we put up our Unbreakable episode, and now we're breaking down The Glass, as some might say, pun intended. JD, I just got out of the movie about, I don't know, 5-6 hours ago. It's still pretty fresh on my mind. I'm ready to talk some Glass here with you, man. So let's dive into it. I guess, spoiler alert, if you have not watched the movie yet, you may want to hit pause, go back and watch it, come back to this. JD, first thoughts on Glass.
I enjoyed it. I think that there was a lot of good to be had. I think as we compared it in the previous episode to a Five Guys burger, would you disagree with that?
No, definitely a Five Guys burger with some french fries. Hey, I may even spring for the drink. I mean, I'm feeling good. Normally, sugared, I'm too cheap.
Are you going to do a sugared soda or are you going to get a diet?
I don't like that you call it soda.
Pop? What do you call it?
Call it pop?
Sody pop?
No, just regular pop. Yeah, I would probably go sugar. I like a cherry Coke. I'm kind of craving a cherry Coke now.
Let me ask you this. Do you like cherry Coke out of the can, or do you like to take Coca-Cola and then add your own cherry grenadine?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, both.
Okay. Both.
Now, if I'm at, like, the fountain machine, I may actually go a little, like, Coke and then throw some cherry Coke. Mix it up so it's not totally cherry, just a little bit of cherry in there.
Go wild, man.
Yeah, go wild. Okay, so you're all about it. Pleasantly surprised with Glass. I mean, we're going to go through some of the reviews. It's been met pretty mixed, actually, more on the low end as far as the reviews go. I mean, we'll dive into that in a minute, but I don't get it. What movie did I see that they didn't? How is this movie at 36%?
It's that low?
It's that low, yeah.
I would have guessed at least in the 50s, but 36?
That's rough.
I'm sure you're going to go into what some of the critics are saying, and I've seen some of the mixed review and some of the pandering and a lot of, you know, applause for the film just the same, but it's a low score. That's a failure.
Okay. Here's a reviewer that we know and we've had many times. Richard Roper, Chicago Sun-Times, gave it 2.5 out of 4 stars and said, mostly, though, it's an underwhelming, half-baked, slightly sour, and even off-putting finale. I disagree, man. What part was slightly sour? In what way? Because people died? You didn't like that the characters didn't live on? What are you complaining about?
The word sour sort of throws me off, and I'm trying to think about if he means sour in that the flavor of the film isn't flavorful, or sour in that everything just was crap.
Yeah, I don't know what they meant by that, to be honest. Let's take another review here. Peter Howell of the Toronto Star. Shyamalan is so intent on not making a conventional superhero movie, he ends up not making much of a movie at all. This glass is half empty and not even 1/3 full.
I am clapping, applauding his wordplay. Congratulations, sir. Your master's degree in advanced writing has paid dividends.
And he gave it 1 out of 4 stars.
See, I can see some of the negative criticism to say that it's bland in terms of being a superhero movie. And if you don't observe it as a superhero movie, what else is there to it? But I think that's unfair because then you're comparing apples to better apples because as a superhero movie, it's not going to eclipse the modern understanding of what a superhero movie is because of the MCU.
Right.
There's a looming shadow, and you have to take it for what it is, and it's a low-budget, small voice in a big room of big shoulders.
Okay, let's get to a positive review here. I can't argue with anything you're saying. A.A. Dowd of the AV Club said, if Unbreakable was ahead of the curve, arriving as it did on the cusp of superhero movie boom, then Shyamalan's belated new sequel, Glass, is perversely and even admirably out of step. B-, but it is a positive review.
Well, I think that's an interesting review, and it puts a mindset, at least to me, to think about if we're saying that Unbreakable was ahead of the curve for what superhero movies would become. If this is the end of the curve, what does it indicate? Is this like a prophetic calling for the end of superhero movies? Is everything downhill from here? I mean, are we going to get Avengers Endgame and actually get an Endgame and watch everybody die a la Glass? Spoiler alert, Kyle already ruined it for you.
Right. I don't know. That'd be interesting, though. We'll see what happens, but I mean, I'm not terribly upset with that review. It's not as positive as I thought the movie was. So let's get away from the reviews. So what did you like about the movie? What did you not like?
I'm going to clear my throat really quick.
Sorry
about that.
Go ahead.
So what I really liked about this movie, and we talked about this a little bit earlier in the previous part of this episode, it stands on its own two legs as its own trilogy, and it's three separate origin stories coming together to create one origin of a bigger universe. And to me, the part that I'm torn about, that I don't know if I like or if I dislike, is the ending itself. Not the actual ending with it. I didn't like the part where they go hold hands in the train and watch people's YouTube on their videos light up. I just thought that was so stupid. The part of the secret society succeeding and killing off these three superheroes, spoiler alert again, to me, it creates a conundrum of twofold. One, it's disappointing because anytime that a superhero movie kills off a hero or a villain, you shoot yourself in the foot, which is the whole reason why Arkham Asylum exists in the Batman universe. At any time, Batman could put any villain away and they can come back. They can just break out of prison.
Right.
Which I think is, honestly, it's simple but brilliant. So the fact that they killed off their three leads that they spent 20 years building up is kind of disappointing to me. But at the same time, what we've learned from the ending of this movie and what I took from it is it exists in this universe. There's an unprecedented amount of superhumans. So there can be a continuation of the franchise focusing on this, the three-leaf clover bad guys, or I don't even know that they got a name, where they're hunting down different unbreakable people, unbreakable in quotes, because we don't know what their superpowers may be or what their heightened human potential is. So it ends the franchise, but at the same time, it opens the door. And I just don't know how much I like that or dislike that.
Yeah, I do want to know more about the three-leaf clover people and who they work for. I did not see the ending coming. I thought they died and that was going to be it. And she goes inside and she's going to go about her business. And, you know, maybe there's some new people we're going to see her start tracking down. And then it's like the ending of Saw. Like, we find out it's not what we thought. And this has just been this elaborate put together scheme here from Elijah, Mr. Glass. And it just starts unfolding and it's got the voiceover and the flashbacks. And I'm just like, that little genius, brittle bone son of a bitch. He pulled it off. Yeah, I mean, just the performances, which we'll get into in a minute, are amazing by the top three main characters here. Sarah Paulson's great as the Doctor. But yeah, I mean, I like the ending. I agree, the subway scene with YouTube, it felt a little lazy, but I can't say it's not true. Because if something happened like that today, you could probably go to a subway and everybody would be watching it on their phone. Not yeah. Inaccurate.
Okay, so I will say I do agree with you, them having that coda part of Glass having this master plan that he was enacting the entire time was cool. You know, I agree. I think that was a cool little punctuation mark on the entire film. But the problem that I have, and this is one of the few problems that I have, is one, why would the Clovers let the three of them live? You know, they kill off the superheroes and they're like, okay, all loose end, they're done. We killed them. Let's let these three witnesses go.
Oh, that's a good point.
Well, unless I missed something, But obviously, you know, nobody's going to believe him. Like, that's the point of what they were trying to do, is to be like, hey, we're going to destabilize the mentality of these individuals to the point where they don't even believe that they have superhuman strengths or powers anymore. So who's going to believe, you know, they got the SWAT team working on it? It's a giant cover-up. I get that. But a cover-up includes tying up loose ends. And if they had tied up loose ends, when Glass sent out those last burst of emails, somehow he got the email addresses of two people he's never met before. Congrats to him.
Yeah.
I would think that the natural, I mean, if you go onto YouTube right now and you look up real ghost videos or real superhuman tricks or stuff like that, you're going to see videos of people doing stuff that people are just going to naturally say, I don't buy it. You're supposed to believe half of what you see and none of what you hear. So anytime I see something on YouTube about a UFO landing or something like that, I just think, okay, movie magic. I don't believe it. So I don't think that the proof is in the pudding for what they're putting out to the world. I wish there was something more tangible that they could have or would have had. Like if they had made it to the tower and it was like a live broadcast or something like that, instead of just these videos that could easily have been manipulated or staged. That's my complaint.
Okay. Okay, give it a rating. Where do you put? Out of 5.
For the entire movie, my enjoyment and everything I took out of it?
Yep.
I'll say 3.5.
Okay.
Closer to a 4, because I really enjoyed the movie. And you know how I get. Any superhero movie that I watch or that we talk about, I'm going to complain about and find errors and problems that I have, and it comes from both being a super fan and having high expectations, but also from realizing that you sort of write yourself into a lot of plot holes and you cheat the ending in some ways.
Yeah, here's an interesting fact for the audience here. One of my favorite Batman movies is JD's least favorite one, I believe. You do not like The Dark Knight. True or false?
That is true. I do not like The Dark Knight.
You don't like any of the sequels that Nolan did?
No, I don't. I think the original Batman movies are superior.
Okay. See, I love the original Batman. You won't get any complaint from me out of that. In fact, I look forward to us doing Batman Returns sometime this year. It's long overdue. Man, I love Nolan's, I love his trilogy. And you do not. So you are very critical, and I know that about you. So let's get into the cast a little bit. I think this is a good transition here. We've got James McAvoy, who is listed under, I don't know, about 15 different credits here from his split personality. What do you think seeing him for a second time in this role here as Patricia, Dennis, Hedwig, the Beast, etc.?
Nicely done. I think he's fantastic. He's a great actor, and it's so interesting and so fun to see the way that he sort of spreads his wings and gets to play one character inside of a multitude of characters. And so he really gets to show off his array of acting chops, which is really cool. And in this particular film, I really kind of like the way that it starts, where it just sort of hops into the Horde being out there, and the Beast is now the 24th entity or personality. And I don't know, for me, it works. It starts the way that a superhero movie should. And he's the way that a supervillain should be. Like, we don't need to reestablish him at all. But we get to see his development by seeing new personalities, including that one redneck one, which I loved. Which was, well, and they all talk about me spoiling movies.
Right. What's your favorite personality that he switches to?
That guy. I loved that guy. Yeah. I expected him to break the fourth wall and to be like, well, don't worry, y'all. I won't tell you that everybody dies at the end.
I like the... I think I go with Barry. Barry's the one that has the, like, East Coast accent, right?
He's the designer.
Okay. Maybe not that one, then. Is it Dennis?
Dennis has got the deep one, and Dennis's character's changed a lot from Split to this film. In Split, he and Patricia were the ones that were really marketing for the Horde and really trying to merchandise that personality. And in this one, Dennis really turns a corner and is like, I screwed up. I don't believe in this anymore. I don't want the Beast. I don't want any of this.
He's got that deep kind of, well, Patricia's wrong kind of a voice.
Yeah, I'm going to go Dennis for me. He's awesome. I think he steals the show. I really do. And he's got some pretty good competition to try and steal the show from. You got Bruce Willis here, David Dunn. He didn't have much of a role in Split, but he kind of shows up at the end, which is cool. So he's been 19 years removed from this role. What do you think of seeing him here extended in Glass?
Bruce Willis is such an interesting and fascinating actor. And it's interesting because I personally watched within the span of like 4 days Unbreakable, Split, then Glass to really prepare myself for this movie moment. And he has come a long way from Unbreakable to Glass, but he still looks good. And he still carries himself with that silent, macho type of a mentality of having that reserve, but yet strong bravado that was established in Unbreakable, and he has it again here. And I think he does a really cool job of when the doctor actually sort of gets him to question if he's unbreakable or not, is to see if he's actually the Green Guard or the Overseer or whatever the heck his nickname is. I love that they battle back and forth, that they can't put a pin on what they're going to call him. And it's just, it's fun to see him, like, he doesn't say a lot, but he just, in his face, loses faith in himself somewhere around the middle of the movie. And then he doesn't get it back until he realizes on his own, at the encouragement of Samuel L. Jackson. Like, I thought that was such a powerful scene between the two of them. I actually got shivers during that scene.
Yeah. That was going to be my next person to talk about. Elijah Price, Mr. Glass, the legendary Samuel L. Jackson. Yeah, I mean, what'd you think of him in this role? And I love that he really doesn't talk for half the movie.
I like that. I thought that was a really smart choice. And especially since, you know, again, spoiler alert, earmuffs, if you've not seen it, you find out that he's quiet by choice and that he's duped the doctors and isn't taking his medication, that he's outsmarted them a while ago. And he's just been biding his time. And like, that takes so much patience and such a careful mind for him to like live in isolation, waiting for the moment for to strike. Like, that's criminally insane. Like, that's messed up. It's like the scene in the new Dumb and Dumber movie, Dumb and Dumber 2, or where Lloyd pretends to be crippled in the hospital for years and years and years.
It's one of my only parts of the movie that I actually like.
So it's what it reminded me of, but it's just so sinister. And the fact that they just play him so well and he's just twitching. Like, that's it. Like, I would love to read the screenplay to see how he describes, you know, Elijah Price as he's in the wheelchair and the orderlies are checking up on him and his face is just twitching. At first his eye, then his lip, then his cheek, then his other eye. He's twitching so menacingly. It's just, you know, he wrote it like so perfectly and it played out just excellent.
So let's come back to Dunn. So his son, Joseph, reoccurs. He was in Unbreakable, and it is the same actor that played him, now 19 years older, now a grown man, Spencer Treat Clark. What'd you think of him as a Joseph?
Well, and I thought he was annoying as a kid, as I think all kid actors
yes,
are.
Yes, you do.
Like, but I thought
Charlie. Go ahead. Oh, sorry.
Gosh. to me, I thought it was a welcome addition. It made sense to the story to bring in the kid. He's got this investment in his dad. He knows his dad's secret. And they've got this security company that they've run with this almost Punisher type. I forget Punisher's assistant that runs things out of the battle van. I forget what his name is.
Oh gosh, I have no idea.
You know, Deadpool's got Weasel who runs things behind the show. You know, it's that smart assistant who doesn't have the powers but can do things. It just made logical sense to me anyways. Like, I thought it fit.
Yeah. How about this to make you feel a little bit old? He's only 2 years younger than we are. That's how old Unbreakable is.
Wow.
Yeah. With that being said, let's talk about our other characters here. So we have Mrs. Price, played by Charlene Woodard. And I thought she did really good in that role as the mom. And yeah, they've got I don't know how old she actually is, because her IMDb makes her look really young, but no, she looks like almost about 70. I didn't know if that was makeup or not, but what would you think of her here as Mrs. Price and putting a little context to who Elijah was as a youngster?
I enjoyed seeing her make it back, and she played such a critical role in Elijah's life and molding him and forming him from a young age into who he becomes, that you have to think that she needs to accept a certain level of responsibility for the way she disillusioned her own child into a world of comic books.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she gives a great performance, especially at the end when she just, I think the word she uses is spectacular to as she's holding her dying son. It's just to, like, I don't know, the level of love that she can portray on the screen holding her child who's just busted all into shit.
Mm-hmm.
And to know how many people he's killed and to still love him, like, I think that comes through pretty clear. I think it's a very underrated scene.
And then we have Anya Taylor-Joy, who's going to play the role of Casey, who's also back from Split. She was one of the girls that he was basically kidnapping and planning on killing. I like seeing that storyline continue. What did you think?
To me, that was the weakest of the continued storylines. I thought, like, I enjoyed seeing her come back, and I think it made sense for her to get closure.
Right.
But I don't much think that I enjoyed the whole aspect of love's true touch, or, you know, it was very Disney to me that she can just bring him out and, like, quell the beast.
Was that just a little too mushy for you there, Tin Man?
Just a little bit. I it felt like overwritten and convenient to the plot. Like, there could have been something more, in my opinion. It could have been written differently if maybe she sacrificed herself for the beast and the beast realizes, oh my gosh, she's impure, yet she still died. So why am I killing impure people? And so all of a sudden he has a question of faith. Just spitballing.
Okay. And then the last character we'll talk about is Sarah Paulson as Dr. Ellie Staple. She's fantastic. I don't know that I've actually ever watched a Sarah Paulson movie or TV show that I didn't think she was amazing in. What did you think of her?
Where do I know her from?
Okay. Well, probably a bunch of stuff. So she was in American Crime Story as Marcia Clark, the O.J. Simpson trial. So she was in that. American Horror Story. She did several years of that, 85 episodes. She was just in Bird Box that came out, 12 Years a Slave.
You know, I'm not going to lie to you. I've not seen a single one of those.
Well, yeah, she does a lot of drama. I don't know that that's really your forte, is it?
If it's a good drama.
Yeah. Well, you don't like Titanic, so that's why I hate you. What? So what would you think of her as the doctor, though? The actual character?
I thought she did a pretty solid job of riding the line between being trustworthy and admirable and sleazy. And there were times when I was like, I don't trust her. And then there were times where I was like, well, she kind of makes a good point there. And so, you know, it really, her performance brought me into the movie and it gave good pacing to the story, where it wasn't just a wham, bam, thank you, ma'am type of a performance, and it wasn't just an espionage kind of a thing. It was just very, in a good way, tedious.
Okay.
Almost like a metronome clicking. And she speaks, and you're hypnotized, and you're brought into it, and she's doing what she needs to do. And I think that was kind of what her role was, as this traveling, I don't even know, psychotherapist to the super.
Yeah, there's still a lot to know about her character, I think. If there is a continuation, I mean, she's got to be heavily involved, right?
I would think she would be the focal point.
Well, hey, let's wrap it up. Overall, you gave it a 3.5 out of 5, closer to a 4. I'd go with a happy 4. It wasn't a 5 for me, but I definitely left the theater going, man, that was fun. I like the movie. I like all 3 of the movies. I think they're all good. I need to get them all in my collection. I don't own any of them at this point, and that definitely needs to change. JD, any final thoughts on Glass before we wrap it up here?
Yeah, I just, take my words with a grain of salt, because it does sound like maybe I was critical at some parts, but it's just because I hold the film to a higher standard in many regards, and I expected a lot from it, and it delivered in many ways. I was very satisfied with the way that it came through.
Okay. And then quick reminder, we do have a poll topic up on Twitter right now. Make sure you go over there, vote. Help us pick our next movie that we're going to review the first week of February as we dive into a comedy rom-com. We'll see what you guys pick. Thank you for clicking the download button on today's episode. As always, you can rate, review, and subscribe. Help us spread the word. JD is at UnjustJustin on Twitter. I'm at KAutry29. Give us a follow. And as always, we're jumping back into our DeLorean, and we're heading back to, we're just going to head back in the next week, because we're in pretty present day with this Glass movie. So we'll talk to you next week with our rom-com episode. See ya!
Glass shattering.